Hello and welcome, fellow awesomeologists, to Awesomeology. I'm Sue.
And I'm Ben. And in this episode, we're sitting down with my good friend, Zach Zellner, outdoor therapist and co-founder of Live Life Leadership. Thanks, Zach, for being here. So happy to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, it's so nice to meet you. I am excited because you and Ben are friends already. I get to be the person that asks you all of the questions that he already knows the answers to. That's my job here. So what I think we should start with, the thing I am most interested in, is how someone goes from coaching to mental health counseling and your journey to get where you are today. So tell us, give us the timeline, friend. Tell us about you and about your journey to where you are right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it's been quite a journey. you know, so it really, we're going to go pretty far back. So all the way back in like seventh or eighth grade, actually, was that's when I got like introduced to the idea of like goal setting and self-improvement and leadership through a summer camp that I attended. And I just continued to attend that all the way through high school. And then also in that time, was really active in sports. So wrestling, cross country and track. And so self-improvement and motivation, that's always been like at the forefront of my mind. And so I kind of just followed that. And I was a terrible high school student. And so my dreams of being a big Division I runner came to a screeching halt as soon as I graduated. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up going to a two-year school, UW-Manitowoc, and tried it out there. Academics still weren't my thing. I couldn't quite grasp what was going on. I really struggled with being able to focus, being able to get stuff done. And so I actually got into sales, and I was a high-end kitchen cutlery salesperson for a while.
Okay.
And, you know, from there, I was able to start working with people as a sales manager. And what I found was I didn't really like sales. And I really didn't enjoy like the marketing aspect. What I did enjoy, though, was the one-on-ones that I would have with the salespeople, where we would make their schedules. We'd talk about like, what is it that actually excites you? Like, why are you doing this? And from there, all of a sudden, it just started to click. And I'm like, you know what? There's another job where you get to do that. And like, that's what you do. And so from that point, like I really got into psychology and really just leaned into it. And in the meantime, yeah, I was a cross country and track coach. And that was, that was filling that desire to help people perform their best. And I loved the sport and wanted to give it back. And then outside of that, I mean, all of the different jobs that I had as like a barista and a bartender and stuff, that all just played a role into finally here I am now, working with people, sometimes, you know, at their lowest, and other times actually they're at like their highest, and they're like trying to figure out what's next, or why doesn't it feel like I thought it was going to feel. So that's kind of a synopsis of my journey. There's also, you know, working with Ben at a leadership camp as well for a period of time, which, man, let me tell you, those one-on-one conversations with Ben, if you get to have one of those, make sure you have one. So,
yeah, we may have lost just a couple of hours of sleep over the years, mm-hmm. Caught up in conversation, but
reinvested time.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, speaking as somebody who gets to have maybe more of those conversations with Ben than Ben is strictly happy with, I will co-sign on what you're saying, Zach. Yeah. What a guy. Great conversations with this guy.
You guys are sweet. Okay. Zach, I gotta kind of like rewind a little bit because I'm still like a bit kind of like enamored with the shift from, you know, where you, and I mean, you know, part of it I think is just like age and college and like just a lot of the figuring out that happens in that period of one's life. But I mean, still quite the shift from what you had going on to like, all right, let's just do like psychology and leadership coaching and things like that now. Like, do you recall, I mean, you know, it sounds like you had things like cross country and track and things that you were passionate about that kept you connected to those fields, I suppose. But can you recall like a moment or an experience that you were like, oh, dang, yeah, this is it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I don't know how I skipped over this. The brain is funny. So in that time period where I was a high-end kitchen cutlery salesperson, that's actually where Live Life started as well. And Live Life is like my meaning making project. So I lost a friend to suicide, and part of the grief process for me really ended up being, how can I help the people around me live? So LIVE actually stands for love, inspire, value, and empower. And that's my hope, that when I come in contact with people that yeah, they leave feeling loved and inspired. I'm adding value to their life, and I'm empowering them to really live life the way that they see fit. Because yeah, I'm helping them see that they have the authority to live their life. And so with that, we were just, it was me and my buddy Jake who were working on it. And we started off as the Live Life Project. We were just a little blog, and I was just throwing out some ideas and did some like keynotes and some like breakout sessions, stuff like that. And yeah, I was working up in Rhinelander as a branch manager for this marketing firm. And it was awful for me. The company was great, right? Like people have been super successful with them, and I was not one of those people. And it was, you know, there was just a lot of lack of action on my part. But I recall having this awful, awful interview with a person, and I was just like, it was that moment where you just head in your hands, like, what in the world am I actually doing? Like, I hate this. And, you know, I was like, God, I really don't know what the hell to do here. And then a couple of days later, I was like, dude, you need to get back to Live. Like, that's what drives you. That's what's exciting for you. And that's what hits deep, right? So then I ended up going back to UW-Manitowoc to finish my schooling career. I didn't though. but I did, and I didn't know this at the time, but I did end up meeting my now wife. But that's a whole nother story. We don't have enough time for that story. But so that's actually how Liv was born. That's how I got into the field of psychology, because you know, I figured if I was going to be speaking on this subject, I really should be. I wanted it to be more than a feel good message, or, you know, like the message was, and eventually, like, I got to this point where it's like, all right, the message is pretty fluffy, and it's not, there's not action happening, which is why I ended up going back for like my master's in counseling and everything. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Did I clear it up then?
Perfectly. I love it. Good. I do want to revisit one other thing that you said, kind of like that moment for some people where they reach a milestone, achieve something, whatever, and they kind of have that feeling of like, wait, I thought it was going to be cooler than this, or, you know, the immediate, like, what's next and that sort of thing. Can you, what do you do? What do you tell someone in that scenario that's dealing with like that conflict? And I don't know what you can share. And of course, client confidentiality, I'm sure, is super important, but like,
yes, absolutely.
Do you have a story you can share?
So, I mean, I would say that each of us probably knows that feeling, right? Like one way or another, we've always thought that something was going to be so much cooler than what it was. Or, you know, I think a lot of times what happens and the reason why I love hiking. So actually, this is how I'll go about it. So the reason why I love hiking, especially for something like this, is because I'll take somebody who is very destination focused, and then I will purposely make the pace slow. Mm-hmm. And we will like look at stuff, and I'm not the guy who can name every plant in the woods, so I'm not trying to do that, right? But the idea is, let's slow down, and it's cliche, but enjoy that journey. Because we get so destination focused that we summit and then we look and we're like, shoot, that's a bigger mountain. And I think I see people on that one. That means I got to go for that one now. And we don't take time, one, to even enjoy where we are. And then the other thing is, we really, through that whole time of working towards that destination, we really build up and hype up how great it's going to be. Everyone's going to be so proud of us. Everyone's going to want, you know, they're going to things. The whole thing is going to change for me. All life is going to change. The change in life, that shift, that transformation happens on the journey, not at the destination. And so I really, when I'm working with people, I'm really trying to get them to think of like, what are you enjoying about getting here? What are the, like, how are you going to get yourself to enjoy the boring aspects of this? Cause that's, if you can get yourself to enjoy boring, then like you're golden. That's huge. To be able to sit in boredom, is actually, one of the ways that you can get into flow state, which is a whole nother awesome topic. But
yeah.
All right.
Go ahead.
As long as we are circling back around, something I heard as you're introducing yourself was when you were talking about the fact that you struggled in school, and because I notoriously do all sorts of online stalking of our light online stalking of our guests. I, of course, have been on your LinkedIn, been on your website, and I noticed that one of the things you offer is support for adults with ADHD. Now, here's my backstory. I have two sons who were both diagnosed as kids with ADHD. My two sons have two different fathers. So if we accept the idea that ADHD can have a genetic link, I am the genetic I am the genetic link for these two guys. And as I watched them grow up, what I realized, even though I was never diagnosed as a kid, was that my thinking is much more similar to the way they think and the way that they go through life than my husband's. And I, you know, the three of us are terrifically nonlinear. he and my other child are, you know, you can see that more linear thought and that ability to maintain focus, that, you know, and just some of the things that would tell me that they're on a different journey than us. So that is what triggered me when you said you didn't, you struggled in school, because I'm certain that is why I struggled in school.
Absolutely. So I ended up being diagnosed with ADHD my junior year of high school. So when you talk about that struggle in school, it's there. And then when you talk about not being diagnosed with it and just kind of living with like that, maybe I am, maybe I'm not. And then you see your children growing up with, you know, being diagnosed with it. You're like, oh, okay. Maybe maybe I am. So now what do I even do with that? Like, so, I mean, there are a lot of adults who they weren't diagnosed with it. Whether it was because people weren't looking for it. I mean, there's obviously that whole like, generation where you didn't go and see somebody. Mm-hmm. Right. And even if you were diagnosed, there's still, schools are trying their best, absolutely. And yet there's still limits to within the classroom, right? And so it's tough. So like I would say that anybody who, if you have members in your family that are diagnosed with ADHD, like I think it's worth going to somebody and actually going through an assessment and just getting that answer. Even just having the answer sometimes is liberating within itself. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So, yeah.
And is it's accurate to say too that it is more, I don't know if it's more difficult or just less diagnosed in females, in girls. I think, it, you know, when I was coming up as a kid, it probably was going undiagnosed
in
all kids. But I think that was still at a time where they sort of thought girls couldn't have ADHD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and then we get into like, how everybody presents differently with ADHD. Mm-hmm. And really, like, ADHD itself, that name is, it doesn't do the diagnosis justice. It doesn't explain what's actually happening. You know, the whole attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, that's just such surface level stuff. Mm-hmm. Right there. Like, if you check out the top experts in the field right now, they would tell you that if they could, they would rename it. And they would name it so that it really pointed to the fact that this is an executive function disorder. So like executive functioning is being those higher level thinking processes. And so like what we see with kids is they can mask really well. So like, I would say that girls definitely have more pressure when they're younger and onward, but like to be good, right? To like really be good. Boys will be boys, we say, and they're going to run around and they're going to climb on everything. But girls don't do that, which is not true. Girls can climb on everything. They can play with the tractor, all that stuff, right? But so then what you see is that they're going to mask that because they're going to really work a lot to be able to sit and study and be good as a student or as good as they can. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for going on my divergence there.
No, that was great.
Expect more, Zach.
Game on. Yeah. Let's do it.
So you mentioned hiking before, and yeah. Part of the reason, I mean, besides you being a good friend, that I wanted to talk with you today is because, as far as I know, this is relatively new work for you, kind of like doing some of this therapy in nature and stuff. And I say all of this, not quite having a crystal clear picture of what you're doing on the day-to-day or how this fits into what you're doing. But for some people, that connection between like physical and mental health and the performance of those things together may not be super obvious. So what told you that like this physical aspect, this natural aspect to the work you're doing could help you build what you're doing now and what you're hoping to do in the future?
Yeah. So anytime that this actually goes again way back, all back into high school even. Anytime that I was struggling as an athlete, so like with my running and stuff, I always ended up at UWGB. And I would run their trails there. And there was a spot that you would come to, you'd go off trail, and then it comes out to the bay and nobody was ever there. And like, that's where I would have like my, my like real talk with myself type thing. And then when, you know, I started doing therapy, a lot of my work is up in Door County, and that is just like, there are so many great trails. And so, you know, I'd take my clients for hikes, and then one day I was like, you know, if I could just do this, if I could just lead hikes or like outdoor retreats and stuff, that would just be golden. So I hopped onto good old Google and found the Center for Nature Informed Therapy Training, and I was like, all right, I'm going to Maryland, I guess. So I signed up, and then it was one of those beg for forgiveness type things with Amber. I was like, I'm heading out for a week long training in Maryland in September. So
yeah.
But awesome. It is, and it's more than just the hiking piece. There's, you know, there's something very, very therapeutic about being able to sit by a creek or sit by the lake, listen to the waves. There's a lot of acceptance that comes with nature. You know, I always tell my younger clients who are dealing with, you know, like getting picked at, that when we're hiking and deer flies are bouncing off their heads, I always remind them like, man, if you can deal with deer flies bouncing off your head while hiking, you can deal with anything.
Yeah.
Like if you can keep it together as those things are bouncing off your head, man, you got some serious self-control. So.
Yeah. Cool.
So as long as we're talking about some of the stuff you're doing, another thing I saw on your website was, I don't want to get it wrong, brain spotting? What is it?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about it.
Yep. Brain spotting. So brain spotting is, it's a form of therapy it's a form of, I'm going to say trauma therapy. It can be used for more than just trauma, but it's based off the premise or the idea that where you look impacts how you feel. And so what I'll do in a brain spotting session is I'll have a client, you know, choose an issue that they want to work on. So they might be really specific about the issue. They might just have this general thing going on, right? And from there, as they're describing it, you know, I'll ask them just to bring awareness to their body and just notice, all right, what are you feeling in your body? Like, where are you feeling this the most? And from there, then we'll find an eye position. And what's really cool is that'll all link up, and then we'll sit with that. And, you know, some sessions are really quiet, actually, and we just sit and stare. And the idea is that I'm holding space for them. And we have these brain cells called mirror neurons. And that is why there's that mirror principle where if like I shift this way, people shift that way, you know, type thing. That's your mirror neurons working. It also helps with healing. And so there's this thing called attunement and co-regulation. So it keeps people, as they're working through trauma and their emotions, it keeps them feeling safe. Because that's one of the biggest things that happens with trauma, is they were in this time in their life where they didn't feel safe, obviously, and they felt hopeless and alone, and their pain wasn't witnessed. And that's, I mean, and that's a very probably minimized way to even say it, but that's kind of the gist of it. And so now in brain spotting, I'm witnessing that and allowing them a safe space to finally release it. And so we say it's a bottom up therapy approach. So talk therapy is going to be top down. We're coming from the brain down. Bottom up, we're coming from the body up through the brainstem into a part of the brain that's holding the memories and the emotions. So it's very powerful. I use it with a lot of police officers and veterans. And my favorite thing to hear from people is, I was able to sleep.
Dang.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So with such unique therapies that you're offering, how do you put this together as a business and explain that value proposition to people who are used to, if we're going to do therapy, you should sit in an office and I'll lay on a couch and that's what therapy sure. is. And don't rock sure. the boat, Zach.
Well, so thankfully early on in my schooling, my practicum and internships, I got hooked up with people who rock the boat, who are really informed in those types of therapies, who now kind of help out. So the way that I operate right now is that I actually have two contracts, really. One is with an agency called Oak Ridge, who they are doing, they're actually going out and getting clients for me. Okay. And then, so they take care of that marketing piece, the big marketing piece. They take care of the billing, stuff like that. So when they're coming in for me, they already know the clients already kind of have an idea of what they're getting into. And then the other contract is with a nonprofit called the Wellness Command Post. And, same thing, so the Wellness Command Post works with veterans, police officers, first responders, and their families, just offering, low cost to free, mental health services, as well as archery group, which I work with, and an art group, and then some retreats and stuff. So we're actually, in these retreats, we're actually introducing them to, stuff like brain spotting, nature therapy, so that when they're coming into session, they have an idea of what it is. So right now, it hasn't been too hard to convince people. But even I have a Psychology Today profile, and I'll have people that will reach out to me and say, "Yeah, I want to do brain spotting." Thankfully, Google and YouTube can be really good tools. So people research a lot more now when they come in, which is a double-edged sword, because if their research is a social media site, then some of that content's pretty good. Some of that stuff, it's like, all right, we're gonna have to do some education, and we're gonna talk about why it's part truth, part misnomer. So
yeah. So I need a bit of advice here.
Oh,
for
great
prospective clients. What are some of the signs that someone might see or things they might feel that would make them a good candidate to reach out to you?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. So, you know, I would say if you are walking around and you're finding that you just feel like your chest or your shoulders are always weighted down, probably a good time to reach out. If you are in a situation and you walk away from that situation, you're like, I have no freaking clue why I reacted that way. Like that's not who I am. Why did I do that? And that's lingering with you. Like, absolutely, you know, come on in. And again, saying, you know, going back to things are really good, and I don't know why I can't accept that they're good. You know, because then we can get into, so like we can do trauma work, we can do some mindfulness stuff, and gratitude, like all that, you know, stuff that I know some of those words have lost their weight recently, which really, it actually sucks, because mindfulness and gratitude are super powerful tools in perspective changing, and so it's, I'm trying to kind of like reclaim them back and give them their power back, you know, in my own way. But so I always love it when the tough guys come in, because then, you know, when I finally get them using like gratitude, you know, like the words and stuff, it's like, all right, cool, we got this, you know. But yeah, I would say that, or, you know, even if it's just like some really easy signs. All right, if you get home and the first thing you do is grab a beer, all right, I know we're in Wisconsin and everything, but really, if the first thing is you're like driving home, you're like, man, I can't wait to get home and crack open that first beer, that's a problem, right? That's called self-medicating. That's not like a, I enjoy the taste of this, so I'm going to have one. That's, I, right now, the only way my brain knows how to cope with what's going on is to medicate. So,
So interesting. Yes, just yesterday, I'm a volunteer for NAMI in our area. Cool. And I was on a webinar, and they were showing a chart, like the stress level chart. So national stress levels and the state. And they were talking about, you know, you can see here's March 2020, you can see the spikes, and, you know, that data ended in the end of 2024, I think. And you can see, like, here's the whole country and here's Wisconsin. And it's pretty much following along, you know, and you see right there at the end where, you know, it's sort of at the end of 2024, it's, you know, coming down to what you're going to assume are normal levels. But if you look at this yellow line, which is an inch below where all of those spikes are, that's a normal and healthy stress level. So we peaked, everyone peaked. And we sort of all followed the same track in different ways with different kinds of trauma and stress. And as of at least a year ago, we hadn't come down, and we were still all at this high level. And then the conversation turned to, so what do people do, especially in Wisconsin? And, you know, unfortunately, we got to see one of those, you know, really neat graphics that showed binge drinking in the state how Wisconsin was on that one. It was very high, was dark blue, and Wisconsin was awash in the highest levels of binge drinking.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, it really is built into our culture, unfortunately. What is exciting, I'll say, is that in meeting with people, there is like this desire to get it out of our culture. And so that's actually really exciting to hear people talking about. And then I've also, I have to look more into it. So, but I have seen like some reports that the younger generations, they're slowing down with the drinking, which then, you know, right away the comeback to that is, well, there's a different substance now that's available. Yeah. But at the same time, okay, so we're bringing something down though, and right. alcohol has been a real issue around, you know, with Wisconsin, and it really does like ruin families and stuff, right? Ruin lives. So yeah, when somebody is saying to me that the first thing they do is they crack open that beer, and you know, I say, well, you know, why wouldn't you go for a hike, or why wouldn't you do a hobby? And they come back with, well, I don't have time. You know, then we can get into, well, did you only have one beer? And then we get into like the whole, well, no, I had a few more. How long did that take? Right. And we never want to attack, obviously, because then we dig in our heels when we feel our values attacked. But yeah, it's a shift that is definitely overdue. So,
All right. So before I move on, I got to just say, back to your notes about mindfulness and gratitude and how they've, you know, kind of taken a bit of a hit as far as their relevance or meaning. We see a similar thing in our field with words like strategy, you know, and,
sure.
you know, somebody's got a plan with a bunch of check boxes in it and they say they have a strategy, and it's like, no, you don't even, we could digress on that for a little bit, but I'm not going to do that. But it's just, you know, I think for people that maybe are of the marketing mindset listening to this and, you know, wondering why we're talking about gratitude and mindfulness, like there are connections to these things that people latch onto because they become buzzwordy, they become a bit cliche. Mm-hmm. And then people that are leading this kind of work or doing this kind of work that shouldn't be, or at least like shouldn't be yet, you know, maybe they want to, they have high energy and motivation to be like leading strategic planning sessions or to be mm-hmm. leading gratitude retreats or whatever it might be called, you
right.
know,
right.
You know, it's a bit dangerous to how that might affect like industries and mm-hmm. people's lives and businesses and stuff, because you're, you know, not giving the best advice or, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like lipstick on a pig sort of situation with some work. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, when we take the meaning away from a word, like, then it's, when you name it, it doesn't have the same power. Or like when mm-hmm. I have somebody come in and I'll call out trauma, they're like, no, you know, it's not trauma because I don't like that word. It doesn't mean anything. I'm like, no, it means a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it means a lot. And you can't just let it not mean something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no, it's really important that we, are careful of how we choose our words.
And yeah.
So
yeah. Words matter.
They do.
So some more advice for our budding entrepreneurs out there, how should they approach bringing a unique or maybe even untried, service to life?
Yeah. So one, you know, get the basics down, right? Like make sure that you got that foundation piece. Really surround yourself with a good support, right? So I was pretty lucky, again, like the people that I was able to surround myself with. Get your training in, like take care of that stuff. And then when you're finally ready, like, take the shot.
Yeah.
You know, you've done everything. You prepared, like go for it and be ready to fail and try again. Like, yeah. I mean, really, you know, we are just bombarded with these like stories of new entrepreneurs who they nail it the first time. Well, one, we don't see what they've done in the background. And you know, like failure is a very positive thing because there's a lot of things to learn from it, obviously. And it if you go into it with a growth mindset, so I failed, and that means that I'm a step closer. Right. You can pick yourself up from that. But we can't fear failure.
Right.
I had to write down that quote. That's right. You lost me for just a hot second because I had to write that down.
I said something quotable. Wow.
Yeah. You're very quotable, Zach. You're being very quotable today. And so quotable, in fact, that it makes me sad to think that we are actually coming up to the end of our time. So, but before we get to the end of our time and we get to the transitional part where we talk about something awesome, how can people learn more about you, or what would you like to draw people's attention to so we can make sure we share that?
Sure, absolutely. So you can reach me through my website. And you can also reach me through, I am on Psychology Today. I do have a profile on there. And then also, you know, through my Facebook, or I really don't use my Instagram, so don't do that. but and then my LinkedIn. So, and then, yeah, that'd be
okay. The best.
And it's still something I'm perfecting, right? Like that piece. So
Yeah. Well, it takes time, and with a couple of healthy contracts giving you work, you know, that's some of that stuff might just have to sit in the background for a while, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, this has been awesome, but we do have to transition to our Something Awesome segment, like we transition and close every episode with. So this is where we share recommendations for cool things that we've experienced, good books we've read, good podcasts, whatever. Zach, I kind of want to say you're off the hook, and everything that you shared in this discussion is something awesome, but if you have something, you can share it. I'll kick it off as I always do, and I'm just going to say this might date this episode a bit, but I'm cool with it. We just got back from a little excursion to visit some friends in Omaha for the 4th of July. And I don't have anything super specific to share. Maybe I'll say like a plug for the Omaha Zoo. It is actually, for 3 years in a row now, the rated the best zoo in the country, which might surprise some folks because a lot of people think it's San Diego, which is an awesome zoo as well. But if you've got kids, if you like animals, if you like zoos, the Omaha Zoo is legit. It is awesome. Get it on your list. So with us going there as a family, and with, we kind of went with several other families to visit some family friends that lived down there. 8 parents, I don't even know, 15 kids, 16 kids, something like that. It was a little bit of a nut house, but we had so much fun. Not only at the zoo, but just like downtown Omaha, like awesome food and, like family stuff to do, like all right there, super walkable and really family friendly and stuff. So just an awesome time, like the stuff to do in Omaha, but personally just a really awesome trip for our family to be with friends and have our kids be with kids that, you know, some of them, they knew each other, others it was kind of the first or second time seeing them. So lots of the kiddos made fast friends and had lots of fun along the way. And just one of the best parts of being a parent, and Zach is a fresh parent, you're going to get to experience all this stuff. Like there's just something really special about like seeing your little interact with another little and almost like feel the connection with them, you know, like, oh, you're like me, or you're different than me. And that's cool. Like, tell me more. And just like seeing all that stuff, experiencing that stuff is just super cool. And to do it around a holiday and poolside and with fireworks and all that stuff just made it that much more magical. Last thing I'll say this, I just remembered this. So Omaha has like very loose, or maybe I should say no, fireworks regulations. So for like 10 days leading up to the 4th, which we were there for part of that, it's like all the time, all over the city, including during the day, which we couldn't figure out the whole time. We're like, why are people lighting off fireworks right now? Like, how can they see? But we went out to eat one night at this cool spot that had games and things like that. And we came out and, you know, just across the whole horizon, you could see fireworks, like these great shows like happening all over the city. So we just popped the back of the car and sat in back and kind of got this free fireworks show. And it just like went on forever and was really cool. So depending on if you like fireworks or not, depending on if you've got pets or not, any of that stuff, you may hate this idea. But if you like fireworks, Omaha is a pretty cool place to be over the 4th.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. All right, Zach, you got anything for us?
Oh, man. I mean, that's going to be hard to follow up. So let's see here. As far as awesome goes, I will say that if you are looking for something awesome to do and you got time, definitely head up to Door County and check out places like Pottawatomie State Park, Whitefish Dunes State Park. Man, there's just something really awesome about getting out there early in the morning, especially Whitefish Dunes, and watching that sunrise over the lake. It's just, man, I got a spot, I call it my PowerPoint, and that's where I go if I need like a little extra motivation and stuff. So yeah, that would be that's my awesome recommendation.
Love it.
Perfect.
Love it. Well, the stars just aligned for me on this one because I came across an article that I found really, really interesting, and we have the perfect guest for me to bring this up. What I learned from this article is that Gen Z is using ChatGPT for free therapy. And very interesting article, and from fortune.com. And it does go through the things that I would anticipate you would say, Zach, which is we need to use caution when we use something like a large language model, AI, for our therapy. We need to, the article says, you know, a lot of people who are having the best experiences are supplementing other traditional therapy in a way that is more immediate, that is available all, you know, all times, day or night, and things like that. But that we should always use caution to use professionals and experts in their field and not just a large language model, which is trained on everything good and bad. So thoughts on Zach? Yep. I'm interested to hear.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe you brought this up now.
That's another hour, right?
No, I think so. ChatGPT, like AI, is really cool and exciting. And I think that we do have to use caution. Right, because it can give really bad advice. Part of therapy sometimes is stepping out of your comfort zone. And that for some people means sitting across from somebody and talking about your feelings, or, you know, having uncomfortable conversations. So from that perspective, it would not be as helpful if you are skipping therapy sessions because AI is more comfortable. If it is something where, you know, you need to remember how to do a certain self-regulation skill, then I think it's awesome, right? Yeah. Like if it can lead you through, the one that comes to mind is box breathing. So breathe in for 4, hold for 4, you know, like, all the, you know, it talks you through breathing. I think that's great. And I think it also can help with research so that you can come back to your therapist and say, you know, I was thinking about this, talked it over with chat. What do you think? You know, and have those discussions. But I think though on the other side of that is you got to really be careful about what's going to happen with that information. You know, and how can that information be used? That's the beauty of therapy is it's confidential.
Right.
it stays in this, in the room, and that's what makes it a safe space. So,
yeah.
Has there ever been any talk about fully AI therapy or a fully AI therapy program or anything like that?
So, I mean, I'm sure there has. I haven't seen it. There are like AI scribes now, which, you know, I've tried out. I tried one out. And it was pretty cool because it's like all I did was describe what the session was. Because I didn't record the session because that's extra paperwork and I didn't want to deal with it. But and I let it, but I said what happened, you know, and it was able to even like pin down like the specific approach that I used and the type of therapy I did. And I was like, that, yes, that is awesome. You know, so I think that it really does have a place in the therapy world. It's just one of those things of it's so new that we gotta figure out all the safety measures and protocols and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just very similar to marketing, right, Ben?
Yeah. I was just going to say, I'm just like continually baffled. I don't know why, because like it seems to be the case in every industry, every specialty now. Like everybody has a similar answer in that it's proceed with caution. Don't forget the power of, you know, traditional methods and being outside mm-hmm. of your comfort zone and stuff. And all of those things apply to marketing, whether it's, you know, using ChatGPT or sitting comfortably using social media, because that's the place where you can do marketing work and also hide a little bit, you know, like we got to remember to do the things that take some more effort and take some more brain power and can be empowered by and amplified by an amazing tool like AI and stuff, because it is awesome in so many ways, but proceed with caution. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're not using it or you're not learning how to use it, you're falling behind. Like yeah. it's here. So
yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Zach. That was such an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
See, I mean, proof of how easy it is to just get caught up late night talking to him. So
right.
Everybody got a taste.
Yeah, I mean, you guys just do such a great job making it so comfortable. You know.
Aw, nice. I'll admit, I was not sure when I saw what you did, Zach. I wasn't sure if this was going to be a podcast or an intervention. So I feel good that it turned out. Sure. Being a podcast, that makes me feel great. So
yeah. I mean, well, you know, hey, anytime that you need an intervention, I will gladly show up and we'll set Ben straight.
Oh, good, cool. Good.
Yep. I appreciate that.
We'll make sure that he gets in line.
Okay. I've got a whole spiral notebook ready.
Get in line, Sue.
Me and everybody else, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us, listening to this really enlightening conversation. And again, thank you, Zach, for being here with us. You can always catch up with us on your favorite podcast app, or you can find all of our episodes on our blog at exclamationcuso.com/blog.
Thanks, friends, for tuning in. Be awesome and see you next time. The Awesomeology Podcast is a production of Exclamation Services. Executive producers are myself, Ben Bauer, and my friend, Suzanne Campbell.
Thanks to Kyla Ganther for our show artwork, Scott Sager for booking our guest, and Alex Westerhausen for social media support.